everybody. This is good old JR Jim Ross, and I want to thank you for downloading the Ross Report. And thanks to my sponsors who make this possible every single Wednesday. Y'all know how much I love to blog and work on my website. And if it's something that you thought about doing, I say do it and let my friends at Squarespace help you. Squarespace makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website. And now you can get a free trial and 10% off your first purchase by going to squarespace.com and using the offer code Ross, R-O-S-S, my last name. Squarespace has tons of great website design templates ready for you to use, or you can create your own unique design using any of their style options. It starts at just $8 a month and includes a free domain name if you sign up for a year. So start your free trial with no credit card required and get on to building your website today. And when you sign up for Squarespace, make sure to use the offer code Ross, R-O-S-S, to get 10% off your first purchase. That's squarespace.com and use the offer code Ross. Thanks to you guys for supporting Squarespace, and thanks to Squarespace for supporting our Ross Report. And remember, you can also get this great Squarespace deal by going to podcastone.com, that's podcastone.com, clicking on the Keep Our Podcast Free at the top of the page, and then hitting the Ross Report button.
He's considered the greatest broadcaster in wrestling history. And now, WWE Hall of Famer Jim Ross brings his legendary voice and his famous friends to the podcast world. Welcome to the Ross Report.
Hello again, everybody, and thank you so much for downloading the Ross Report. Jim Ross here in the rolling hills of Oklahoma. Glad that you checked us out this week, as you always do. And thank you for keeping us into the top 10 of iTunes sports podcasts every week. We appreciate your support. And I can tell you something, folks. Together, we are building something special. You guys and myself are building something very special here, and we appreciate your support. Let your friends know about our show. Keep spreading the word on social media, and it's just going to keep growing and becoming more and more special. I'm in Las Vegas this week, as you hear this, for the annual Cauliflower Alley function. Always a good time. Great organization. They're at CauliflowerAlleyClub.org. If you've never looked at their website, they're a benevolent organization that helps wrestlers that are down in their luck and family members of the wrestlers back, you know, for various reasons. And they keep all the stuff off the record. It's a nonprofit organization. Nobody makes any money working for the Cauliflower Alley Club. Everybody is a volunteer. Everybody pays their own expenses. So it's a great company, a great organization. And they do some wonderful things for people. And they don't broadcast it because they're sensitive issues. You don't want to embarrass somebody because they're down their luck, or they need help, financial help. And that's what the Cauliflower Alley Club does. And they earn their money every year for their annual events by their fundraiser, their banquet. And that banquet will be on Wednesday night as I am recording this. A lot of things on my mind this week. You know, I have my pro boxing broadcasting debut on Memorial Day on Fox Sports 1 and for Golden Boy Promotions. That's Oscar De La Hoya's company. I was down in El Paso at the Fort Bliss Army Base. It was really, really cool, folks, because the event was held, as I said, at Fort Bliss at the Stout Gymnasium, the Stout Gym. That's their gym there. It's called Stout, S-T-O-U-T, kind of appropriate, right? Amazing atmosphere on Memorial Day. And we had a bunch of soldiers that had just returned about less than 72 hours before we got there from Afghanistan, doing a year in Afghanistan. Then they got back to Fort Bliss, and they came to the boxing event on Monday night. So it was really neat meeting a lot of those guys and thanking them for their service to our country and seeing the smiles on their faces. And a lot of them didn't recognize me at first without my cowboy hat. But by the time the night was over, it was a big time meet and greet, photo op. I had a great time. And again, when you see somebody in uniform, without embarrassing yourself or them, I don't think you will. It doesn't ever hurt to tell them thanks for what they do to keep the United States free. And or any country where you're listening to this program, your servicemen and women are doing all of you, me, everybody, a tremendous service by keeping our countries free and safe. So in any event, it was a fun night. I had a good time. I enjoyed meeting the fighters. The fighters are a lot like the football players in the NFL, the XFL I've met. They're and a lot like wrestlers in the sense that, especially the young ones, some of the fighters I've met reminded me of some of the kids at NXT, in as much as they have big dreams, they have high hopes, and they're ready to begin their journey. And so I enjoyed that hookup with those guys and calling their fights. Not sure I'll do it again. You know, it's up to the powers that be. And coming up with the right, arrangement that everybody's cool with. I'm certainly not against doing some more boxing, but we'll have to see where that takes us. It was kind of fun doing live TV again on Monday nights. It wasn't Monday Night Raw that I had done for years, but it was fun. I had a good time, and I got so much great feedback, and want to thank everybody that's maybe listening that sent me a tweet or a text or whatever. That really it made me feel good, and I was glad to represent the wrestling fans in a nice way, showing them that, you know, wrestling people can cross over and call something other than pro wrestling. You know, I've always been kind of pisses me off when I get pigeonholed as a one-dimensional broadcaster. And so I think I battle a little harder sometimes to take some gigs to show people that I'm not a one-trick pony. Not sure all the other broadcasters that have broadcast wrestling over the years and even now would probably enjoy the opportunity to do something else from time to time just to freshen up, see what's going on. So had a great time. I want to thank Fox Sports 1, the fans, the soldiers at Fort Bliss, and, of course, Golden Boy Promotions for having me there. And we'll see what the future holds as it relates to boxing. But I had a good time. I had a lot of fun. It felt like a natural fit. And, of course, having a great main event that went 12 rounds and crowning a new champion with Rocky Juarez from Houston, who said if he didn't win, he was retiring at age 34, gave us a great story to tell and a lot of drama. And I think that Mr. Alvarado from Nicaragua smelled what The Rock was cooking on Memorial Day night down in Fort Bliss. And other news or other opinion, in WWE, Daniel Bryan, as I record this, is still the WWE champion, and I would suggest to WWE that the way you take care of this issue is let Daniel Bryan heal and not take the title off in a dramatic in-ring presentation. To me, it makes little sense. Now, if the guy's going to be out 4 months, 6 months, something like that, then I get it. I get it. You got to have the champion on the road. You got to have the champion on television. You got to have him in the ring doing his thing. But if it's going to be 3 months or less for Daniel Bryan, let's say he's going to be back by SummerSlam in August, man, you're going to take a big step backwards by taking the championship away from him. And then I'm be interested in how you would go about, you know, be a tournament. Would you decide at a one-night tournament, at a pay-per-view, how would it be rectified? I can't think of a way that makes sense to me. So, in any event, Daniel Bryan is still the WWE champion. I hope he's glad he's healing well. He's had a hellacious last several weeks. You know, your guy wins the WWE championship at WrestleMania. Huge. He deserved it. He was always the right guy for the role, I thought. And I thought WrestleMania was the right place for him to get his moment. That worked for me. Good planning by WWE in that respect. Then the guy gets married. First time married. And most wrestlers in their early 30s can't say that. But maybe that goes for a lot of people in society, including me. And then, of course, Daniel lost his father unexpectedly coming back from his honeymoon. His dad suddenly passes away, and then he has to have serious neck surgery. The kid's been through a lot, so I think that good days hopefully lie ahead for him, and WWE really thinks long and hard on how to address the championship. Championships are better won in the ring. I have never experienced in my career a championship being stripped from someone and it making the championship stronger. And today there is an issue in all of pro wrestling with titles in general. Meaning less than they should. So if I were WWE, my suggestion would be to really think that thing through, and which probably means if anybody hears this, they'll probably take it off of him. No, I'm kidding. But we'll see how that works out. But I'm really pulling for Daniel Bryan. I love his in-ring work. I think he's got to change a few things in the ring to protect himself a little better. The diving headbutt off the top, gone. His drop kicks are really strange to me because he lands so high on the back up around his neck. Maybe I would eliminate the drop kick, but that's not going to change the course of nature, not drop kicking somebody. He does so many other things well, better than anybody, fundamentally better than just about anybody in the country. So that would be my suggestion to him, but I hope he just gets better, gets healthy. That's the main thing. I've been very impressed with the nuance differences in NXT over other WWE programming. And, you know, NXT is not overthought. The wrestling business is really basically simple. You can make it as provocative as you want if you've got the characters and the storylines that make sense. But it shouldn't be overthought. It's a simple business. The NFL is not a complex business. The NBA is not a complex business. Certainly UFC is not complicated. It's just don't overthink things in the dramatic sense of story writing and creative. I like NXT not overthinking things. The matches more often than not feel a little bit longer at times to me. I love to see the effort from these kids. They're working hard to get moved up to the next level and see where the journey takes them. I believe that coupled with working a full live event schedule in NXT, you got to work it from a live crowd to get better. You can't do it in a warehouse. You can't do it in a high-dollar performance center like WWE has. Or you got to be in front of a crowd that pays money to get in to see you. Whether it's 25 of them or 2,500 of them, whoever it is, that the more times you can perform in front of a live audience, the better you have the opportunity to become. And I think WWE's got to be careful in their performance center not to teach too much sameness. And if you use the same techniques and everybody's taught the same thing, the same approach, same style, it's a problem. And I think using instructors with different skill sets is really smart by WWE. Bringing in guys like our guest next week, the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase, to work with the kids in a verbal sense. You know, Ted's not going with his body being put back together and two knee replacements, not going to get in the ring and take bumps, but he's a great coach. And I think using more guys and bringing guys in, signing guys, there's some new guys coming to WWE that have made quite a name for themselves outside the United States, Kenta from Japan, I think would be a phenomenal asset to help teach guys in the Performance Center. He's unique. He's different. And then along the way, they may have created for him that lets him launch a WWE career at this stage of his life. But in any event, his value, even if he doesn't go to the main roster and make a big splash, will be teaching these other guys a new skill set, a new moves, a new philosophy, new psychology. And I think I applaud that. I think it's really, really smart because you want to have diversity on your roster, whether it be ethnic diversity, size diversity, but you want to have guys that have different styles. It's really important for a company the size of WWE. And especially when you travel around the globe, you want styles that people can recognize and identify with a little bit easier than it all being America's greatest export and everything looking alike is not cool, in my view. So, and I think getting these new guys, new instructors in and teaching different styles is loosely akin to working in different territories back in the day. Been getting some feedback on tweeners. You know, I can't recall any bona fide tweener who ever drew long-term money in that role. Never. I've really racked my brain. You know, I've had some interesting debates on Twitter with some people that really are hell-bent on this tweener thing, or they're a talent that's somewhere between a hero and a villain, so they're a tweener. I think for a talent to be a tweener, they must be cheered and booed by the fans, depending on who those individuals work with, and not that it happens every night, no matter the opponent. In other words, a tweener should always be cheered by part of the crowd and booed by part of the crowd, not based on who they work with in the ring, but based on how their personality and their persona is perceived by the paying customer. I've gotten some interesting tweets, and some of them got a little bit stiff and a little bit disrespectful, and those people got blocked. But some suggest that Stone Cold Steve Austin was a tweener, which is, in my view, borderline insanity. I don't remember Austin as a, even after WrestleMania 17, when he turned heel and became Mr. McMahon's associate, getting that heavily booed. In other words, the heel turn didn't work by Steve's own admission. He told me a story once that he started to call us an audible right after he beat Rock, and then McMahon was out there, of course, and he said when they started to drink the beer, Steve started to call an audible because he didn't feel it. He didn't feel the turn. He didn't. It was, his gut instincts are always awesome, but he was going to clash the beers with McMahon and then stun him, which would have been a real audible and would have changed a lot of creative plans for the company. So he didn't do it, but the turn was ill-advised in hindsight. But Austin, if Austin was a tweener, that means that while he was in his heyday, he would have been booed by fans in every arena and cheered by fans in every arena. There have been a mix. Well, I don't remember when Austin was at his hottest, him getting booed by anybody. So he could not be a tweener. So, again, that's borderline insanity thinking. Really enjoying the Alicia Fox creative in WWE. I think they're doing some. They've made her relevant. People are talking about Alicia Fox. So if you don't like what she's doing, that's fine. But the object of being a star or becoming a star or becoming relevant and that therefore you're going to make more money is to have people notice you. And that's one of the things that if you go, like we talked about earlier, if your style of in the ring is like everybody else's, then why are you different? There's got to be some nuances that you as a wrestler, as a performer, can master and add to your game to make you different. And these post-match outbursts and shows of emotion by Alicia Fox have gotten my attention. So I'm interested in what she does when she comes on the TV. It's not a refrigerator run. It's not sandwich time anymore. So I like Alicia. She's a wonderful spirit and a very underrated athlete. And she's got an amazing grip. Now, she's not in Danny Hodges' level of grip, but she's strong. And so I'm happy that their creative's doing something with her. She's been there a long time and deserves the opportunity. Speaking of the Divas, I hope that the Totally Divas production doesn't go over the line into the eyeball-rolling territory. I think that the more real, the better with these Divas. And it's kind of like akin to scripting promos. The best promos are usually bullet points and let people be themselves, let them create their own passion, their own emotion, their own timing, their own pace, their own cadence. Well, that's how a promo should be done, feeling it. And I think that's how reality television should be produced. It should be real as it possibly can be. And we all know there's got to be some setups and some production involved, direction involved. But, if you go too far with it, you lose the edge. And I think the edgier the Totally Divas program can be, the better. So, let them roll. You know, there's going to be some interesting times because these women are competitive on that show. They all want to get over. They all want to be noticed. Good for them. I'd encourage that. As I mentioned on this podcast, I talked to Summer Rae at WrestleMania, and she said she was really going to stir the pot when she got on Totally Divas. She's done that. And I'm sure that she's not the most popular diva in the locker room for real. Because of her attitude on Totally Divas, I encourage her. Hey, forge ahead, steer the course, raise hell, be a bitch, be controversial. Why not? You're playing a television persona. You want to be noticed. So there you go. This is my crazy booking idea of the week that will never happen, but nonetheless, here's what I got this week. Dolph Ziggler becomes the new TV champion via a multiple-week tournament on Raw that sees, Ziggler wins the tournament, and God almighty, no count-out disqualification lane. Can we just not have people that win or lose? We know that it's showbiz, so why can't we have people that win or lose? Back in the day when people were uncertain of outcomes, that was more viable. Not viable no more, folks. That's really overthinking it. So you have a big tournament over several weeks on Raw. It's episodic in nature. And then the champion, Dolph Ziggler, my suggestion, would defend the title pretty much every Monday in a 15-minute time limit match. I got that time limit in there again, right? I'm obsessed, seemingly. So somebody can tweet me about that, too. So old school, crazy, wool tights, black boots. But you can really create, if you have this situation, you can create some really good storylines, expose various talents, give them some more TV exposure, and break Ziggler out of the pack. And it's kind of like the days when the Intercontinental Champion was arguably the best in-ring performer in the company. Now you can put that responsibility on arguably the best, most underutilized, best athletic talent on the roster in Dolph Ziggler. So I know that I'm not a big hand on the ad titles, but, you know, unless he becomes the – and I don't have an issue with the champions, the U.S. and Intercontinental champions that are there now. They just need to be – the titles need to mean more. So maybe I'm being hypocritical, but I think it's an interesting idea. It'd be great for television, a television title for TV. God, imagine that. So anyway, I can tell you why it won't be done. Number one, for some reason, Dolph Ziggler's not relevant in the eyes of the decision makers. I don't know why. I don't have any idea. You can keep asking. I still don't know why. They're not going to use a regular time limit bout on television because it's too old school and too wrestling, even though it adds drama. Makes sense. We're part of our nomenclature. So that's why it won't be done. But still, it's an interesting idea. And I remember when Arn Anderson was a TV champion in WCW, he had some hellacious matches, made everybody he got in the ring with better. And isn't that the goal, to have a match and everybody leave better than they entered? So I think so. Before we continue, let me mention this to you. I want to say thanks, you know, as always. I really do appreciate you guys supporting our sponsors and our products. It's because of them that we get to do this little adventure for free. And I want to keep it that way. So we've made it really easy for you guys to find all the sponsors in one spot. Really easy. No excuses now. Just go to podcastone.com, click on the Keep Our Podcast Free banner. That's at the top of the page. You know that by now. Then you click on the Ross Report, that's us, and you'll have access to all my sponsors in one place. You could even get to my Amazon link. This is a big, big deal. They get to my Amazon link from there. And even better, you can now link to Amazon UK, Amazon Canada, to help support the show. So just go to podcastone.com, click on the Keep Our Podcast Free banner at the top of the page, and show my sponsors a little bit of love. A little love goes around, it goes a long way. So thanks again, folks, for helping support the show and supporting the sponsors. They're good folks. They're partners of us. They're our partners, and just like you are. So we're working together here to make this thing work, and I love doing the podcast, but I do want to keep them free. I think that's really important. Let's see here. I got a little bit more of what's on my mind before we go to Eric Bischoff. We can let him wait for a minute. He's a good guy. I got a lot to – I'm going to grill his ass today on a couple of things. TNA, or Impact, if you prefer. Based on the ratings information that I've seen, and this is just an observation – so I'm going to make a suggestion. I don't want to make Dixie mad again. But perhaps Impact should occasionally try and come out of the gate with a strong wrestling match that takes me through two segments of their program instead of a long talking segment. Everybody is seemingly in a pattern of doing long talking segments at the very beginning of their shows, specifically WWE and Impact on their two-hour shows. And, man, it's just so predictable. And I would suggest doing a really cool cold open that would highlight the night for Impact, including a strong focus in that cold open on the opening match. That match has got to be a main event caliber contest. Take me through at least one break, but get me hooked on the match. If you get me hooked on the match early, I'm less likely to channel surf. And even going through a commercial break, I'm going to want to come back. I want to make sure I'm back and see how this thing ends. So a good first strong segment, well-booked, commercial break, come back, have your winner determined, or go through another break, depending how good it is. And give the talent more time to tell a better story. It makes for a better TV show. I got no issues. I've been getting some tweets on this with MVP's new faction, and nor do I think that they're copying Evolution. Faction's been around for a long time, folks. I mean, who's going to copy who? Who's the You know, we need to check on who was the first faction, and what does maybe we should talk. I'll talk to some people about that. What constitutes a faction? How many you got to have to make a faction? Three, minimum of three, I'd say so. And you know, 3 to 5. Then you get to the level like the NWO was when it started burning out, water getting watered down with too many people in it. You can't have too many people in it. You got to keep it to an exclusive group. But nonetheless, I'm willing to watch this Impact faction evolve, no pun intended, and see if it works. It might be the spark that Impact needs. And who knows, folks, until it runs its course. We shouldn't just judge everything on the first gut reaction. I see where the great Muta is going to be making an appearance in TNA end of June, New York City, Manhattan Center. Cool deal. I met Muta when he was young and healthy, in his 20s. In WCW, and you know that there was strong discussion in WCW at that time internally about Muta becoming the NWA champion. Very serious discussion. The women loved him. He did amazing moves. You know, he was doing the moonsault when nobody else even thought about it at that time. Well, that's not true. Chavo Guerrero did it, and some others did it. But you know, on the national stage, on national cable, he did some very innovative offensive moves. But he had Gary Hart with him, and Gary was very influential in the booking committee, and rightfully so. You know, he's a Hall of Fame level manager, very bright, knew how to book heat. So Gary, you know, pretty much insisted that, you know, the Asian, great Muta from Japan stay heel. So, you know, we really thought about that, but there were politics involved aside from Gary. I'm not speaking ill of the deceased because I like Gary. He's a good man. And really, really underrated by a lot of people. But there are a lot of office politics, as usual, so they kill that idea. And so, but the great Muta at one time was being considered for the NWA title, and I think it's a cool move that TNA has got him booked. I don't know what he's got left in the tank. I know his knees are bad, real bad, both of them. So we'll see. But it's a cool move for them. It's a good move for them going to the Manhattan Center. I think they should do well there. It'll be interesting to see how the crowd reacts to them in the Manhattan Center as opposed to how they react to Ring of Honor in the Hammerstein Ballroom. I think that just based on a gut feeling that TNA stays on Spike this fall, I don't see, you know, unless Spike's going to change the programming a lot overall. But, you know, it might not be the deal of the century for Impact with Spike, but if creative does become more unique and compelling, perhaps the show can, you know, heat up, build some momentum. And I hope it does, really, for all the fans of TNA, Impact, and all their personnel. And, you know, those folks are just trying to make a living. And I'm for them making that living. Ring of Honor, I think it's cool that Ring of Honor is using AJ Styles so much. He's a top hand, folks. There's no reason he shouldn't be at another level. I don't get that. You know, I watched him wrestle in person once. I've seen him wrestle on TV a bunch of times, countless times, and I met him. He's going to be on our podcast here in a few weeks. He is a top hand, and somebody's missing a boat there big time, in my opinion. But what do I know? I'm no schooler. I still think that in Ring of Honor, they're working if they'd be better off working just a step slower, selling more. Now, here's what this does. You don't hear me talking about it, but here's another point. It allows the announcers to better establish the talent's personas. And why I, as a viewer, should care about them and what's relevant about them is in Ring of Honor. But in reality, that statement about slowing down really could relate to all pro wrestling entities. So if they slow down just a hair, sell a little bit longer what has been done to them, then it gives the announcers more time to get their content in while there's a sell going on. And that's really important because, again, it convinces me why I should care as a viewer about the talent that is selling. Makes all the sense in the world. I want to thank the audience in Chicago for joining me on May 31st. Had a great time, fun time. Great town, great city, great fans. And I appreciate everybody's hospitality, especially the Squared Circle. Great food. I ate a lot, as always. Ate too much. And had a good time. Really had a good time. Certainly, we'll tell you more about next week's show and some other things that I've got percolating. But first, I can't believe all the money y'all are winning at DraftKings.com. You keep tweeting me about it, how fun it is and how easy it is and all the great money that you're winning. I get them every day. And for those who haven't tried DraftKings yet, What are you waiting for? It's America's favorite one-day fantasy baseball site. And do you know why? Because it's so dang easy and fun. It's just a few bucks to enter, and you can win instant cash every day, every game. There are no season-long commitments, and you're not stuck with the same players. DraftKings adds a little extra fun to watching sports. And right now, you can score free entry into DraftKings' biggest fantasy baseball contest of the year. Over $3 million in cash prizes, with $1 million for first place. Enter Jim, J-I-M, today at DraftKings.com for your free shot at hundreds, thousands, even $1 million. Free spots are going fast, folks, so enter Jim now at DraftKings.com.
This is Bill Goldberg inviting you to Who's Next with Goldberg.
Who's Next with Goldberg?
Go to PodcastOne.com. Click on Who's Next with Goldberg, and every Friday, you will listen to conversations with Goldberg and his closest friends. Tony Stewart and Terry Crews.
Ben Roethlisberger.
Sugar Ray Leonard.
Dale Earnhardt Jr.
Burt Reynolds.
And many more.
And you wrestling fans,
I won't forget about you either.
Go to PodcastOne.com. That's PodcastOne.com.
This is the Ross Report.
Excited to talk to Eric Bischoff here this week on the Ross Report. We thank you again for downloading our program. And Eric, thank you for taking time to be with us. I know you're busy, and I know that I listened to your podcast with Stone Cold and was very entertained.
It was a blast to do it. It really was a lot of fun, and I enjoy talking to people like you and Steve, who have such depth and understanding and knowledge and history, mostly history in the business, because you've seen things and you see things and you've got a point of view that's different and unique, and I think that's what's going to be fun about this show. So thank you, really.
Oh, well, you're welcome. And, hey, I look back and I was doing a little research, and both of us kind of started out in a similar lot. You work in the AWA territory for Vern Gagne and me working in the Mid-South territory with Bill Watts. And then the irony of that relationship was that Gagne and Watts were partners along with Fritz von Erich in the McGurk territory back in the days. It's funny, I tell people that the wrestling business back when I got into it in 74 was almost like getting into a nonviolent mafia. It was very closed. You almost had to know someone to get in. And then if you got in, like I did, like you did, you kind of had to earn your stripes to be accepted into a, I don't know if it was ever the inner circle for me for a while. It was not really, actually. But you really had to earn your stripes and their trust. The trust was a big thing.
And it was that was such a big thing with Vern. And just because Vern was Vern, I know, you knew him. And
yep.
And he never, when I first went to work for Vern, he was already in his early 60s, mid 60s. And he was definitely set in his ways. And it took me forever to really gain his confidence and trust. And he was very, very just probably much like Bill Watts was. It just took time. There was no shortcutting it.
No. The night that I refereed my first match, I was told, so you're gonna referee the opening match tonight, and it was in Tulsa, and it was between Mike George and Tretch Phillips. It was the obligatory 10-minute Broadway, and so there was an older gentleman in the office, was a former referee, and he was kind of my mentor, and he said, "All right, they're gonna do a 10-minute Broadway," and and then I kind of got him off to the side and said, "What is a Broadway? Is this some New York thing or something? I didn't know what a Broadway was." So I didn't get smartened up until maybe 10 minutes before my first match. And then not, just kind of the basics things. Because basically it was going to go a draw. So I couldn't screw it up unless the shoulders were not up, and I counted them down. So they kind of were careful to make sure you were going to be okay with the family secrets,
There's a lot of things about, what I've done in the past and my approach to the business that have been, controversial, to say the least. People didn't like it, and I've taken a lot of criticism for some of the things I've done and the way I approached it, and deservedly so. I will admit that going in. But one of the things that, to this day, And it's because of the way I was brought up. And I migrated, you know, we're covering a lot of ground here. You know, I started out in syndication sales, and through just a, you know, series of, you know, bizarre coincidences, if nothing else, I ended up doing interviews and kind of being that traffic cop for a while, not knowing anything at all about how to do it, what I was doing, how to hit a time cue. I didn't know what the little hand signals were that the director was giving me. I mean, you can't imagine how, you know, not prepared I was for that role. But as I survived through that process somehow, out of necessity more than anything else, I migrated and evolved into doing play-by-play. That process took, I don't know, it could be wrong, maybe a year or a year and a half before I ended up actually doing play-by-play. And even then, I wasn't given any real direction. And it was because of the way Vern believed in the approach, which is, you know, I should be reacting to what I see the way the audience reacts to what they're seeing at the same time without a whole lot of, you know, preparation and knowledge and inside, you know, kind of background, because A, Vern didn't believe in doing that with someone like me, and B, he really believed that announcers should react and feel as opposed to, and those are my words, not his, but react and feel as opposed to telegraphing and acting. Uh-huh. And I still believe that to this day. I believed it when I was an announcer, and I believed it as a producer. I believed it as an executive producer. I still believe it right this minute. That, yeah, you know, the best announcing is done when, you know, you're an exception, and there are other people that are exceptions that have learned to emote and react because they love it. They feel it. So there's no acting involved. They're not checking boxes and doing lines that they've memorized. They're emoting a real feeling because they're passionate for it, but at the same time, they, like you have, developed the talent for communicating what needs to be communicating, but not at the expense of the emotion.
Yeah, I Watson was a lot like Eddie Graham and a lot like Byrne, a lot like Fritz. All those guys are cut out of the same cloth. As far as the old school of the business, they wanted their announcers to be almost like you would do it if you were doing if it was a mainstream sport. Describe what's on your monitor and communicate it accordingly. Don't try to – every call can't be the walk-off home run in the bottom of the ninth. And that sometimes that became one of my enemies because I was having so much fun as a fan doing play-by-play that, hell, I'd get wrapped up, you know, in the – because I wasn't an actor. Like you said, I was just trying to be a sportscaster in a very unique genre that really wasn't a sport, but it had sports qualities, if you know what I'm saying.
No, I do. And, you know, as we talk about, this is really funny, and I haven't done any announcing in a long time, and there's a reason for that, and I don't ever want to do it again. But I miss it. I miss those moments when I was so caught up in what I was seeing and calling it and feeling it simultaneously, especially when it was live, because when you allow yourself to forget what you're doing is broadcasting and you're communicating and you're feeling it, it's a high in a different kind of way.
Yeah, it's a great rush, no doubt about it. I remember, I don't remember the year, but I remember you coming to Atlanta, and Jim Hurd was the... He's certainly an enigma to a lot of fans and a lot of the talents. I tell people, and, you know, I was single at the time and living there in Atlanta, and he was, you know, he'd stay there for 4 days, and he'd go home on Friday type thing or Friday afternoon. So I'd have the opportunity, well, you want to go have a drink? Sure. You know, I'll buy you dinner tonight. All right. You know, hell, I'm not doing anything. I'm no wife, no kids there. So I'd go out with him and occasionally, and I saw different sides of him. You know, he had different sides, but what was your impression of Jim Hurd at the end of the day, as a man and as a the head of the department?
You know, I actually had so little contact with him. You know, I felt, yeah, you know, it's just my nature. You know, it's the way I still feel about Vern Gagne today, and it occurs to me how much I really owe that man. I feel very strongly about it. And I, you know, not to the same degree, because I worked closely with Vern, and we became friends. But I never got that with Hurd, but I felt a sense of loyalty to Jim Hurd, only because everybody's got a story about being broke and flat on their back, and I certainly was, and mine was no different probably than a lot of other people's. But to me, you know, my kids were eating rice and beans. I couldn't afford to put propane in my propane tank. I was so far behind on my mortgage payments, it was just a matter of time before somebody came and, you know, booted me out of my house. There were so many things going wrong financially, because like you said earlier, you know, it was hard to get into the wrestling business. And even though I was going through all those financial issues, because Vern was going through those issues and was, you know, experiencing the same thing at a different level, you know, I didn't want to get out. I didn't want to quit. I didn't want to leave the business because I knew I'd never get back in if I did. But when Jim Herd called me, and it was after I tried out for the WWE, you know, did my interview down in Connecticut. Mm-hmm. When Jim Herd called me, I was so close to the bottom of the financial barrel that to this day I'm grateful for it.
Hey, look, I tell people that I was in a unique position to get to know him a little bit. He didn't know a lot about the fundamentals of wrestling. We all can agree to that pretty much. But you know, as just a guy's guy, and, you know, to get out and talk about football or sports or whatever was in season, or he was a big ice hockey guy, and he was like a lot of people that came through WCW before you got the job that were put in a position that they really weren't qualified to be because they didn't have the product knowledge. And then, you know, how our business is, there's some masterful swervers in this business. And somebody's going to listen, download this podcast that's not a American. A swerver is a con man, right, is for another word. But these guys got, I saw some of the greatest swerve jobs in history before you took that job. But boy, you know, Herd was in a tough spot. He was in a no-win spot, Eric, I think, from the day he got hired. I thought it was just a matter of time until something's going to implode and he will be out of here because he has no clue about the business.
Yeah, I mean, the one impression I did get from him, and part of it, you know, I don't know if you and I have ever even really talked about this, but part of my, really the only, you know, eye-to-eye contact impression I really had with Jim was right after I did my audition tape down in the bottom of the C&M Center next to the Chinese restaurant, if you remember that.
Yeah.
And then they shuttled it on up to Herd, and I was just waiting around, you know, walking around the C&M Center like an idiot tourist, you know, trying to imagine what was going to happen next. And they called me up, and I went into Jim's office, and whatever, I can't even do a good Jim Herd impersonation because I can't remember his voice quality, but essentially, I mean, he was a very straightforward guy. He was, you know, I want to say gruff because he was sophisticated, you know, in a business sense in terms of his presentation. He was an executive. He wasn't crude, but basically he said, and I'm paraphrasing, you know, hey kid, you got the job, you look great, and your job, you got one job here, and that's, you know, to make, you know, Jim Ross and Tony Schiavone miserable. And I knew what he meant by that. And it wasn't to go around and, you know, bang on you in the back of the head with a little tin shovel. It was, you know, to be there, sure, to work hard and try to create competition. Absolutely. Is what he was trying to say in his way.
He told me that story before, not too long after you came. He said, you know, I hired this Bischoff kid. He's a good-looking bastard. I said, yeah, he is. He's a handsome man, Mr. Herd. He said, I hired him to make you and Schiavone have some competition here. He's going to make your life miserable. I said, okay. You know, what are you going to say? I mean, he's the chairman. He's the head of the division. But that was just for business. And, you know, I started thinking about that. Well, you know, really, when you're a booker and you bring a top talent into your territory, their job is to make the top talents that are there life a little miserable too, because nobody wants to give up their quote-unquote top spot or their gig. And I think that it was a smart thing, Eric, quite frankly. You know, you had a great look, and you had great skills, and the fact that it kept everybody from becoming complacent and comfortable in that comfort zone. I hate comfort zones. That's a big pet peeve of mine. So I thought it was a good hire. You got grunt work in that beginning, but you did it, and you did it well.
Well, and you know, you're being kind. I actually had very little skill when I got hired. I looked the way I looked, but I didn't have anything to do with anything other than my mother and father. but I really didn't have any real skill when I got there. But what her, you know, what he did, he had a good instinct. You know, he may not have known anything about the wrestling business, which he clearly didn't know enough of. But, you know, he was a smart guy. He didn't get there because he was, you know, a dummy.
Right.
And you're right. You know, you talk about the swervers in the business, and this still exists today. You know, wrestling is such a weird, unique space.
Amen.
And people, and believe me, for years now, I mean, I've had large television studios hire me to come in as a consultant on projects that were, you know, their intent was to kind of be the new version of, you know, wrestling. And, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah. When Watts got, when Watts went home, and, you know, I'll never tell the story when, well, two stories, real quick, because this is about you, not me. We went to the Bash at the Beach, and I may have told you this story, that when I got to the Bash at the Beach, Watts said, I want you to fire Bischoff. And I said, well, for? What do you do? I mean, I thought, you know, maybe you did something. No, I don't know. Maybe you got, you know, whatever. I don't know. I said, what for? And he said, I don't like you. I said, that's a hell of a reason to fire somebody, because you don't like him. I said, well, he does good, and his role, I mean, I don't get it. And I said, it's not like we have a lot of depth in this announcer area. So I said, I don't know why you want to fire him. He said, well, then it's on your ass. He's your guy then. I said, well, he doesn't need to be my guy. I just think it's stupid to fire somebody because you don't like him. I told Bill, remember when we left the hotel, we changed hotels in Shreveport, and you called me one morning about 8 o'clock on a TV day, and we were going to go to another hotel that morning because the croissants weren't buttery and flaky enough? I said, that's what the hell this is. Bischoff is not buttery and flaky enough for you, so you're gonna change hotels. It makes no sense. He said, all right, if he screws, you know, he's your guy. Okay, I'll take him. He's my guy. If that's going to end the conversation, he's my guy. But when Watts came in there, I had no idea that he was getting the job. And, you know, it's all these years later. Well, I got, you know, well, kayfabe now. I don't, it matter to me. But everybody thought that I was part of that, you know, there's a conspiracy, and Watts is coming in, and, you know, Jim Ross is Watts' guy, and got him started. And he did. All that was true. He did get me started. He'd been like, he was my Vern. He was my Vern, no doubt. But they kept it secret when he came in. But when the damage it did to me, when he left, as under the terms that he left, were tough. That was a tough lick to take, you know, after, because I like being in WCW. I like living in Atlanta. But you got that job, and I was always admiring, you know, I admired the way that you wanted to make the brand, change the brand, and change the perception, because that was essential. So I thought you showed a lot of courage in doing that.
I really don't think much about the past. I know I've said that before in interviews and put up my book, but it's really true. I mean, I just, sometimes I forget. People bring things up and go, wow, that really happened. I forgot I was there. It's like a movie you forgot you were actually acting in, you know?
Sure.
But people don't understand the condition. And I wasn't going to bring this up, by the way, but people didn't really or don't understand just how incendiary Watts was when he left, and what kind of impact that had on Turner Corporate because of all the things that were associated with it. And going back to what you said a few moments ago, which is, you know, you ended up getting a lot of that heat for no good reason, other than people just assumed, you know, you were his guy.
Yep.
And, you know, that was the catalyst for some of the decisions and some of the, you know, the framing of the events that took place. Not because any of it was fair, not because it should have happened, but at that time, in that moment, it was bad.
Yeah.
Really bad.
It was tough, you know, I've talked about this. It was tough leaving because, you know, I had the little Falcon gig on the side, and I had a, you know, I had a great, I like where I lived, and lifestyle was good, and I had a sense of loyalty to the to Turner, so, you know, it, but at the end of the day, it worked out best for you because you resurrected a dying brand and made it something, and for me, it launched a 20-plus year run with WWE, which saw a private company go public, which I benefited from financially, So at the end of the day, when people say, boy, do you hate Bischoff because he ran you off? I said, no, you know, well, it wouldn't quite ran me off. But bottom line, however you want to look at it, no, I don't hate Bischoff. I don't hate anybody. And that's like you talked earlier, Eric, about you don't think a lot about the past. I think a lot about the past more now than I used to because I'm doing these podcasts and you got to do a little research. You talk to guys. You reconnect. But boy, I tell you, I can't live my life carrying around hate and anger.
Now, you know, because we're older and we're smarter and we've got more scar tissue and, you know, we're wiser. You know, you're 62 and I'm, you know, right on your heels. But from the perspectives we both have now, not only should neither one of us or anybody be carrying around that kind of negative baggage because it just burns calories and you realize later in life you can't afford to waste.
Yep.
But in retrospect, your life ended up being way better as a result of it. My life did. Steve's life did. Steve Austin's life did. So you know, sometimes stuff's just supposed to happen.
Yeah.
You got to roll with it.
It is supposed to happen. I got a lot more. We have a lot more to talk about with Eric Bischoff. More questions, more topics. I want to talk to him about the landscape of today's television. The wrestling scene seems to be changing and evolving. As it should. But first, I got to give my buddy Diamond Dallas Page and his DDP Yoga a little love here. If you haven't jumped aboard the DDP Yoga train, then folks, you need to. DDP has completely changed the yoga game. He's changed it forever, folks. He's turned it into a high-octane, fat-burning cardio workout. This ain't your mama's yoga, no sir. But it's still a great program for people of all ages and any skill level. And it's really easy on the joints, too. And now you can experience the benefits of DDP yoga yourself. My buddy DDP is offering you a great deal on the Max Pack. The Max Pack has 15 workouts, a nutrition guide that shows you which foods are good to eat and which foods are the best to avoid altogether, and recipes. It also comes with a 13-week grid chart to plan your workouts, and a poster featuring the 12 core positions of DDP Yoga. And if you give DDP your email address when you order at ddpyoga.com/JR, you'll get the workouts in MP3 format so you can exercise on the go. So order now at ddpyoga/JR. That's ddpyoga.com/JR. You can also take advantage of this great deal by going to podcastone.com, clicking on the Keep Our Podcast Free banner, and then hitting the Ross Report button. Hey, folks, it's good old JR. Is your computer running slow? Well, mycleanpc.com can clean it up and speed it up today. Now, you might be asking yourself, how did my computer get this way? It's so frustrating, right? Well, opening infected email attachments, downloading music and games can slow your computer down. Over time, running these programs can cause junk files, internet clutter, processor and hard drive errors to build up on your computer. MyCleanPC can help. First, go to MyCleanPC.com, and in minutes, you can get a free computer diagnosis and find out what's slowing down your computer. Then simply activate MyCleanPC software to clean out the junk, the internet clutter, and even remove viruses, and MyCleanPC is guaranteed to increase the speed of your computer. With MyCleanPC, there are two easy steps to speed up your computer. First, go to MyCleanPC.com and get a free computer diagnosis. Then simply activate MyCleanPC software to optimize your computer and its performance. Go to MyCleanPC.com today and find out what's slowing down your computer. That's MyCleanPC.com.
The Ross Report with Jim Ross.
Back on the Ross Report with Eric Bischoff, talking about a variety of things to do with television, because Eric's involved in television and produces television with his partner Jason Hervey. We were talking on the air about one of your shows. You're wrapping one show now. You said this Scott Baio, right?
Yeah, I mean, the Scott Baio show is in production right now.
Okay.
On Nick at Night, Yep. It's called See Dad Run. We're in post-production on a new show that's going to start on VH1 in July.
I'm looking at some notes I took about these various wrestling-themed reality television shows that are either on the air or pending. Talking about Total Divas on E! That WWE does. Billy Corgan of the Smashing Pumpkins is looking to have a AMC show about his Chicago-based promotion. It looks like Tough Enough will be coming back on the WWE Network. Jeff Jarrett is allegedly going to produce or create a reality show with the folks behind The Biggest Loser and, I guess, Mark Burnett. What do you think of all those? You're in that reality show business, and you've been in it for a long time and been successful at it. Is it? I guess my question is, if those shows all come about, is it good for the business, or is it oversaturation, or you know, I guess time will tell. But I would think that, you know, it might not be the worst thing that could happen to get the genre on more, you know, a different look. I guess what I'm saying, instead of just a ring and a match, and you know what I mean, that kind of thing.
It depends on what it is. You know, you may remember this. We did a show called, you know, Hulk Hogan Celebrity Championship Wrestling on CMT. And the original, you know, concept behind that show was not to use celebrities. It was actually to use real people. It was kind of like Tough Enough with the volume turned up a little bit and updated. Because Tough Enough was a great show, by the way. I love that show. But it was the very beginning of kind of like the reality show competition elimination format genre. So it didn't really get into the depth of characters and personalities that they could have at that time. Now, maybe they will now because, like everything else, it evolves. But we did, you know, Celebrity Championship Wrestling, and it did okay. But I think as we move forward now, to answer your question, if it's something that's very contrived and just non-organic, I don't think that will be helpful at all. Because we've seen that. It is what it is. It's a long backstage segment. If it's the real look at professional wrestling, well, we've kind of seen that too.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it depends in the future. It depends on what ultimately someone is able to really sell that will make it to the air.
Yeah, you know,
and not just make a good press release.
I say, when people say, well, would this match work? You know, if somebody fantasy books something and they say, well, what do you think about, you know, whatever, wrestler A versus wrestler B? And I say, well, you know, it's all a matter of the presentation. It's not really, you don't know until you present it, until you lay it out, and what kind of story arc does it have, and you know, what's the blow-off going to be, because you really can't get into a really thought-out, big-money program unless you know how it's going to end. So I think that's kind of where we're at here on this situation. It'll be interesting to see how everybody produces their stuff and how they survive or how they don't. Now, the biggest producer of wrestling programming, of course, is WWE. It seems like, or at least I'm told, and I'm not there anymore, I don't work there, and very little contact with them, that Vince McMahon is taking a little bit lesser of a role, which I have a hard time believing. How do you think that Triple H and Stephanie will do when the time comes that they are in the driver's seat, they're running a company? What's your gut on that one?
My gut is that they're going to do well. They may not be able to pioneer the way Vince was able to pioneer because he is a unique animal. Mm-hmm. You know that better than I do. But if you just look back at, and I hate to use the term body of work because it sounds just so snooty, but if you look back at his accomplishments and what he's done, he was a lot like Ted. You know, it's one of the reasons I just kind of admire Ted to this day.
Yeah, me too.
He's a pioneer. Ted was a pioneer in his own way. But Ted created 24-hour news. Ted created so many of the things that now, you know, people watching it don't even know he was associated with, let alone created, that, you know, Vince McMahon Jr. is much out of the same mold. It's probably why they didn't get along. They're probably too much alike. But you know, do I think Triple H has those qualities? Probably not. You know, I don't know him. I know very little of him. Mm-hmm. You know, do I think Stephanie has those qualities? I don't know. Apples generally don't fall too far from the tree, so she very likely may. But I don't think it matters because Vince McMahon Jr. blazed such an amazing path that this is going to come out wrong, Jim, and I'll apologize to everybody, including, you know, Triple H and Stephanie, but it's theirs to screw up at this point because it is such an amazing machine that I'm pretty certain that between the two of them, they will have no problem keeping that machine rolling because of what they've learned and who they are.
Right. She has the DNA, and he has, you know, he's got a – he was one of the guys when we brought him in, and, of course, he worked down there for you before he came up north. He was one of the guys that in the clique when he was running with Kevin Nash and Scott Hall and Sean Waltman, all three guys who I like, but they're kind of – they're really individuals. I mean, they have strong personalities, and they, you know, they don't mind expressing themselves in any form. But he was the logical one of that group. He was the one that, you know, when somebody was getting real pissed about something, and they would kind of have their way of protesting or whatever you want to say. He was the one that we could normally, as in the office, could reason with. Or could communicate with, or he could explain their grievances better than they could, in a more articulate, in a non-confrontational way. So, with that said, in my estimation, he seems to have the right kind of personality to deal with talent. And you know, I don't know if you agree or not, but you know, the two keys to running a company like that are talent and television.
You know, honestly, I don't know that he actually worked for me. And if he did, it was for me. I mean, I don't think he worked for WCW when I was in a managerial role. But if he did, it was for a very brief period of time.
Mm-hmm. You know,
and I really didn't interface with him at all. And I'm pretty sure it was his decision and choice to want to leave to go to WWF or E at the time.
Yeah.
But it was just a brief moment. And I remember, it stands out to this day, but I went to a party, I think it was a Christmas party at Diamondell's Page's house, and everybody was there, and, you know, we were all, this was, you know, before I got, you know, involved managerially and all that, we just saw talent, and it was a Christmas party, and everybody was drinking, having a great time, and kind of loud and obnoxious, and just being what we were, who we were at that time, and I remember looking at Triple H, and he was kind of standing in the kitchen off by himself, and he was enjoying himself, but he was very controlled. He wasn't a part of the chaos, mm-hmm. to your point.
Yep.
He collected himself. He wasn't drinking at the time, and I don't think he ever has or does, but
nope.
I just looked at him a lot. The guy's just a little different than the rest of us here.
Yeah, he's got it together. You know, he's under control, and he's a big picture thinker, so he reminds me of Vince in that regard. Looking at the big picture and knowing that he's got to develop some stars because, you know, I believe, Eric, and I'd love to hear your opinion of this, is that, you know, I told Vince a long time ago that when the territories evaporated and they went away, that there would be a time in our business that would be critical as far as developing talent and getting, you know, skilled talent on television. And we're there. The business is there right now. They're rehashing, recycling, and the people, there are a few new people in WWE that are starting to get over, like the Shield and so forth, and the Wyatts. But, man, there's like, you can name like six guys when you're that's really hot in the whole business. It's unheard of.
I've heard that same. I've been in the business not nearly as long as you, but I've been in the business almost 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
I've been hearing that same discussion almost since I got in the business. And it morphs, it changes. It's like, do we go, you know, with the older established guys, or, you know, how do we create new stars? I've been a part of listening as a fly on the wall, as the center of the room, as a guy that has to make a decision, as a guy that was on a receiving end. I've seen it all, heard it all. And you're right. I don't disagree with you. I absolutely agree with you. But the art in creating talent, in my opinion, is not just the knee-jerk, oh, my gosh, let's all go with new talent.
Yep.
Because we've seen what happens when you do that. You load your roster with a bunch of people that nobody's ever seen of, heard of, developed a relationship with before, and your ratings tank. And then you go, oh, my gosh, we're going to go back to the, you know, the established guys or the veterans. And then you bring the veterans in, and the ratings go up. And then after people get tired of seeing the veterans again, the ratings start sliding, and then they bring in the new guys again.
Yeah.
It's like watching weather patterns. It's amazing to me. And I think the art, and this is more probably to the nucleus of this conversation, Triple H probably has a great feel, is it's about the balance. You can't get younger, newer talent where they need to be without established talent to help them get there.
Without question.
You can't make those whiplash kind of arbitrary, cut the budget, bring in new guys, we're going to build our stars. If I hear one more person say they think they can build a star, I'm probably going to be guilty of a felony.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't happen like making cookies.
No. It doesn't, man. That's the WWE, one of their issues that they've had this spring, on the programs, storylines, whatever, has been the evolution, which was Triple H, Batista, and Randy Orton. Three very established guys with name identity, all with main event resumes, and they are programmed with three young guys in Ambrose, Rollins, and Reigns. Okay, so the issue is that Ambrose, Rollins, and Reigns are working with guys with more experience, more name identity, and a little bit more sizzle. And that's been very good for them. But that's the formula that you're looking for. Just exactly what you're saying. You got to work with somebody that's better than you more often than not, and certainly has more street cred than you do. And that's what these guys, they're fortunate to have that. But you can't wave a magic wand. It brings me to my question about, arguably, the biggest star you created in WCW was Goldberg. How do you, when someone says, oh, you were there at WCW when Goldberg was there, how do you describe this phenomenon? How was your interactions with Bill? And did you see him as something special early on? Because the booking was, I thought it was sex. I love the winning streak. I thought it was cool as hell.
Yeah, I mean, clearly. I mean, Bill is a very special person. He was a special character. I've to this day, and I don't have the experience you have and the depth of field that you have, but of all the people that I've worked with that I've met, you know, Bill is very unique in the sense that, you know, what you see is what you get. That intensity that you saw when he came out to the ring, there was not a lot of acting there. That was Bill. When Bill got into the ring, he kind of like we started talking about, he was, probably still can, forget that he's in a role, and you're getting what you got. You're getting the guy. And he was so intense that he connected to the audience.
Yeah.
And we saw that early on, but there were limitations. He, as we're talking about now, you can't just, you know, run him through a cookie-cutter press and crank out a wrestler that looks like Bill Goldberg. And we had to work around limitations. We wanted to accelerate the process, obviously, and get him out there as soon as we could. But one of the reasons, I think, there's a lot of reasons, and a lot of it has to do with Bill Goldberg. But I will say this, and I would say it to his face if he was sitting across me, knowing he could kill me with
yeah,
a look.
Yeah.
You know, part of the reason that he was able to get where he got as quickly as he did, much like The Rock, is because of the timing. The stars, the moons were aligned. Wrestling was at a peak at that time. There was a whole roster full of talent that was popular and connected to the audience at that time that we could pair him with and integrate him into story with. So the ease of integrating that magnificent character, which Bill was, into a storyline that would elevate him to the very top was relatively easy, mostly because of him, but largely because of, or in large part, because of the timing of it. Had you introduced that same character 5 years earlier, we wouldn't be talking about this right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think the same is true of The Rock. Even though he went through a couple character morphs, the truth is when he hit his peak was the same time wrestling was hitting its peak.
Yeah. Timing is everything sometimes. And I thought, well, the good thing is both those guys hit at the right time, and they were able physically, charismatically to carry the load. So it was like we talked about earlier. When I left WCW, it was the best thing for me in the long haul as it worked out with WWE. When you got the gig as the head honcho at WCW, it was the best thing for you in the long haul because of what you built. And your legacy that which is a very impressive legacy, quite frankly, in building WCW from a regional good old boy promotion to a national brand that really shocked the world, quite frankly. You know, I was on the receiving end of, you know, if you want to wrestling parlance of 83 jobs in a row, 83 weeks in a row, we got beat. And, you know, that was, some people just didn't respond well to that, and I was so damn busy that you didn't have time to grieve very long because it was you're on to the next thing, and that's just how the business works. You know, nobody said, how did you take all? You're getting your ass kicked 83 weeks in a row. Well, you know, the ratings came out on Tuesday, and you got the news, good or bad, and you just went back to work. What alternative do you have but to go back to work?
Must have been amazing working, knowing the little bit of Vince McMahon that I do. I can't imagine what it was like being around him at that time. Because, I mean, I'm intense, or I used to be, not so much anymore. But, damn, I can't imagine what that was like.
It was interesting. There were some interesting days. And there were days we thought we did good TV. But then you get people involved in the creative, and things start getting overthought. And then it was like, well, we're not being funny enough. We're not being entertaining enough. Or, you know, and I've always had this belief, and you tell me, I don't know what your thoughts are on this, but I would love to know. I still think that today, that the majority of people tune in to watch a pro wrestling show, to watch wrestling. And they enjoy the promos if they're good. They enjoy the humor if it's organic. But they don't tune into a wrestling show with the top priority of seeing a great dramatic performance or a verbal performance by a wrestler. Nor do they tune in to see as their first priority the great comedic skills of some of the grapplers. That's just my take on it. I know it's very simplified, but if things happen that are funny, they're usually organic. And we both had funny things happen to us or seen things on shows that are funny as hell. And dramatic moments that are great promos. Somebody really cuts, a promo that gives you chill bumps. But really, do you tune in to get the drama and the comedy, or do you tune in to watch the whole process that is involved in what a wrestling show is? That's always been my take on that deal. And we had some situations in WCW or WWE where everything got analyzed every week. Well, there's too much of this, too much of this, not enough of that. You know, it's like, it drove you crazy. Just drove you crazy.
And I think that's where, you know, even to this moment, you know, people are making mistakes right now because they overanalyze, as you pointed out. My opinion, and I'm not in the business right now, so I guess my opinion isn't worth too much. But people don't tune in my opinion, for any other reason other than to not think about things. They want to feel things.
Yeah.
And bad comedy and most of wrestling, when it's forced, when you allow the viewer to drop their hands and get sucked into a story because they believe in the character or they identify with the character, Even at a subconscious level, it doesn't have to be like, oh, I wish I was The Rock, or I wish I was Stone Cold Steve Austin, or I wish I was Hulk Hogan. It doesn't have to be obvious, but subliminally or subconsciously, a viewer is sitting at home, they've had a rough day, they've had their ass kicked at work, they just want to have a beer and forget about crap, and they're watching wrestling, and they see a good guy that they want to see win, and they see a bad guy that they want to see their butt kicked, and they see action that allows them to forget that they're watching wrestling. For whether it's 10 seconds or 10 minutes, then you own them because you're giving them what they really want, which is an escape.
Right.
But when you force that stuff on them, and you try to create funny crap, and you try to create things that aren't organic, it's kind of like going to a $15 movie and seeing a boom mic in the shot.
Yeah.
It just takes you out of the moment.
Yeah, or you see the star get replaced by a stuntman.
Middle of the scene, break, you know. And that's what happens too much in my opinion. I'm unemployed in the wrestling business. Well, not quite, but kind of. That's what happens now is that people they overthink it. Going back to what we first talked about, if you don't understand the basics, you're never going to hit the home run.
So, Eric, in looking at as a TV guy, as you are, you're connected in that world, and it's what you do. Is there any possibility, and I'm not talking about anybody that's in business today, but any possibility that a company could come in and compete neck and neck with WWE like the Monday Night Wars? Is that even possible in today's television world and the Mark Burnett's and everybody that has these grandiose plans? Is it really possible for anybody to have a horse race with WWE in that genre?
I don't believe so. The world has changed too much. First of all, it would take it a lot of money. And, let's face it, there are a lot of networks with a lot of money. So maybe money isn't the issue, but risk management is. Everybody wants to cover their rear ends. Nobody wants to take too big a risk that will jeopardize their stock portfolio or their stock options. And everybody gives anything 6 months to be successful. You know, I know, we've experienced it in our careers,
right?
Combined 50, 60 years, that it takes a while for the wrestling audience to go, okay, we're in. We'll believe in you. We'll buy this character. We'll buy this storyline. We'll buy your network. We'll whatever. And I don't think, to answer your question specifically, anybody could ever compete with the WWE the way we did,
right?
WCW did, for a brief period of time, in retrospect, for a cup of coffee. I don't think that'll ever happen again because the conditions are different.
Yeah, they are. Games changed. World's changed. Last question. Do you still stay in touch with many people from the business, just casual?
You know, I talk to Hulk couple times a week.
By the way, I saw him at WrestleMania. He looked very happy, and he actually looked rested. You know, and I'm not saying bad things. I'm just saying he looked good. He looked really healthy, and he looked like he had got a good night's sleep type thing. You know what I mean? He looked happy, relieved, I guess. I don't know.
He's at peace. You know, he's just so comfortable with who he is and where he is. He is relaxed, but in a I don't want to go heavy, but in a spiritual kind of internal way.
Yeah, good.
He's not out working himself, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, his wife, new wife, was a very, very nice person, and I enjoyed meeting her. He had his family, his son and his daughter with him, so that was a good opportunity, for everybody to kind of have a good time. But you can tell a lot by a guy's eyes, and he looked more at peace and more content than I had seen him in a long time, quite frankly.
Yeah, he is. You know, and he's so wise. And you got to really get to know him before he kind of really drops the armor, and you really get to know him. But he's always been a very generous guy, much to his default, actually. And right now he's in a real great place. But over the weekend, just not long ago, I heard from Sonny Ono, via email and text. I don't really talk to anybody. I'm just not a phone guy. Ernest Miller, cool as crap. My son trained under him, got his black belt underneath Ernest. Ernest played, with the Falcons. I think he played with the New England Patriots. Mm-hmm. And Ernest has always stayed close to our family. So I stay kind of in touch with him. But that's really about it. I'm just, I'm really bad.
I had the unfortunate assignment of giving Ernest his notice. I didn't have a thing against him. It wasn't me. It was just the fact that Creative convinced the events that they had nothing for him, and they were, you know, they actually had zero ideas, and they brainstormed it and the whole deal, and it just was an unfortunate situation that's that role I had, you know. It was, you had to, somebody's got to do it, and it wasn't like I had fun doing it, but that was my, unfortunately, I thought he was very talented, had a lot of charisma, and I felt badly that, are you kidding me? You got a charismatic guy, African-American, talented guy, and we can't cast him in our soap opera. That's too bad. Too damn bad.
Yeah, and he could tell you a story about going out to the mailbox for a newspaper, and you'd be on the ground laughing. I mean, he's a fun guy.
Yeah. No, he was a talented guy, and I hope he's doing well. And the last thing here, how's your son? I know your son's in the business. He's wrestling. Has he made a good choice in his view? Does he like the business as a wrestler?
He loves the business, you know, much more than I wished he did. He loves it, and he's really gifted at it. You know, nobody that hears this is going to agree, probably because it's coming out of my mouth. But he's so talented, and he's, you know, he's a good looking guy, and I'm going to be as objective as I can be. You put a microphone in his hand, you don't have to give him a script. You just have to tell him where he's going and what you hope is going to happen when it's over. And he's better than I ever was because he's grown up in it and he feels it. But, you know, I told him in the beginning, I said, here's the good news and the bad news. The good news is I can open a door or two for you. The bad news is I can open the door or two for you. Your last name is Bischoff.
That's
good luck with that.
Well, you know, hey, it's a blessing or a curse. But once he gets in the game, you know how the game is played, better than most guys, better than 99% of the guys. If he is an asset, he will find work. If he truly can be an asset, I've seen him a few times. I think, you know, for a kid that is young and green, he has natural instincts, which I think is cool. You can't teach that. You can teach him to take a good flat back or hit the ropes good or take a turnbuckle, but instinctually, those are things that some people have and some people don't, and he's got that.
You know what's amazing about him, and I know we're going to wrap up here, and I don't want to put my son over too much because it won't be good for anybody, but, you know, he spent the largest part of his life sitting on the other end of a couch listening to me on the telephone through good and the bad, good ideas, bad ideas, and creatively, he's amazing. When it comes to ways to execute things in front of the public and in the ring, he has better ideas than most very experienced guys that I've worked with because he just has that feel. But it didn't happen, you know, naturally. It happened because he listened so much and he spent so much time around so many people that were really good at what they did. Not me, by the way. But, I mean, in locker rooms and listening to conversations, that the feel that he has is, it's not a cookie cutter.
No doubt about it. Well, I hope he does well. I really do. I wish him the very best. I enjoy watching him wrestle when I see him. I'm not as much of a user and a consumer of the product as I have been in the past for obvious reasons, doing other things. But still, I'm a fan of the business, and I'm grateful for what the business has provided me and my family. So I hope he does well. Yeah, if it's his dream, that's what he wants to do, you know, more power to him. What the hell? Hope him be successful, and good for him. Hey, if people are in Wyoming and surrounding areas, tell them real quickly about your beer, because I think that's kind of cool.
Buffalo Bill Cody beer. It's a rye-based beer. It's a little different than most microbrews. It's available in most parts of Wyoming, North Dakota, South Dakota. We're working on Colorado and Arizona as we speak. Developed it about 3-4 years ago. It's doing well in the regional area. What, you know, if you've made a little bit of money, you're way ahead of me. But it's a passion project.
That's it. I get you.
It just is what it is.
I'm with you.
And I'm having a ball doing it.
My wife keeps saying to me, why do you work so hard on barbecue sauce and ketchup and mustard. Well, you know, it all started as a homage to my mother, who made homemade barbecue sauce. And we found this recipe, and it was really good. At least I thought it was really good. And so she says, "Why do you work so hard on this? You just don't." I said, "Well, you know, it's passion and it's a labor of love. And maybe it hits. Maybe it hits, Eric. Maybe I put the right amount of money on red and it hits, you know, at the roulette wheel. I don't know. But I'm having fun doing it, so."
I like it.
All right, man.
Blast.
Look, I appreciate you. Fans, this has been a conversation about the wrestling business, not about this talent who got over or this program or this bad guy, this heel, this villain, whatever. This was this is about the TV business, the business Eric and I both survived in and we made a living in, and we both started out at the bottom of the ladder, and we didn't end up that way. But it tells you that if you love something enough and you work hard enough at it, then by God, you can be successful if you just don't give up the fight. And neither of us gave up the fight. We've never always gotten along amazingly, but when he came to work for WWE, we got along just fine. Never had a crossword that I can recall. And he did a great job as the Raw general manager. And I say this respectfully, I mean it. Your character on television was very easy to dislike. And that is the ultimate compliment you can give to a TV wrestling villain. You're very easy to dislike, so that's a compliment.
I appreciate that, Jim, very much.
All right, buddy. Well, listen, thank you very much for being on, and I will keep in touch, and we'll let you know when this thing is going to air, and I do appreciate your time, and we went a little longer than normal, but, you know, I enjoy talking about the business. Hopefully some of the fans understood the TV business and the business side more than just headlocks and hammerlocks and who's going over. And you know, as I tell them all the time, the most powerful weapon in wrestling has always been the eraser. So we talked a little bit about the business side of it. So anyway, thanks very much. Good luck on the beer. I would love to try some sometime.
All right. God bless you.
All right, buddy.
Bless your wife.
All right.
Bless your wife.
Thanks. Take care, buddy. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Folks, a friend of mine was looking to buy a new car, and he was complaining about having to begin the process, that arduous process that's no fun, of buying a new car. So I'm thinking to myself as I listen to him, you know, there is a better way. There is a better way to buy a vehicle, because buying a vehicle is a stressful process, but it doesn't have to be. That's when I told my buddy about a new way to buy a car. It's called TrueCar.com. At TrueCar.com, you can actually see what others have paid for the same car you're looking for in your area, so you know when you're getting a fair price. At TrueCar.com, you get a savings certificate, and you simply take your savings certificate to a TrueCar certified dealer, so you don't have to worry about the hassle and the anxiety of the old way of buying a car. TrueCar.com users save an average of $3,000 off MSRP. You heard that right. You save an average of $3,000 off MSRP. Folks, I'm telling you, save time, save money, get away from the hassles, never overpay, and take it from good old JR. Visit TrueCar.com today. I want to thank Eric Bischoff for being with us here today. A very interesting conversation, interesting perspective of Eric and his career. You know, starting out kind of as a syndication, working for Vern Gagne, and then working his way on the air, his interaction with Jim Herd when he came in. And, you know, Eric heard the story the first time that, you know, Cowboy Bill Watts wanted me to fire Eric and for no reason. And that was, I think it was a little news to him. I'm glad we didn't, you know. And you know, when you look back at Eric and the brass moving me out of my position at TBS and at WCW, they had an idea and a vision to make their brand national. I think they're wrong, but at the end of the day, what works best for everybody? Well, what worked best for my career was going to WWE in 1993 and staying there 20 years. That was the very best thing that I could have done professionally in my pro wrestling broadcasting career. So it all worked out for the best, and I absolutely hold no animosity, as you heard, with Eric. I did at one time, and I'm sure he could care less at one time.
but we consider ourselves friends now, which is a lot better than being pissed off at people that you've had differences with. You know, I can give you one piece of advice real quick here. Don't lead your life, live your life in misery, staying pissed about something that happened X number of years ago. That's insanity. You can't change it. The only thing you can do about history, folks, is study it, learn from it. You can't change it. So, anyway, good show with Eric. A lot of inside stuff about the business in general. You know, how the business, how he looks at the business. I thought it was a different show, interesting show. And, of course, next week we're going to have Ted DiBiase on here. Before I tell you about that, I do want to remind you, just a little housekeeping. Don't forget you can buy JR's products, our barbecue sauces, the ketchup, the mustard, all the things we manufacture, our seasoning, at wweshop.com, wweshop.com. Good, they're quick. They've got a great fulfillment house that gets the orders out quickly. In the UK and Europe, we're at americansoda.co.uk, and they're on Twitter at americansoda. And then also in the UK and Europe, beyondtheropes.co.uk, and they're also on Twitter at beyondtheropes. They have some cool. Both those companies got some real cool packages. And everything that you see that I've signed, if you're wondering, is it an imprint or is it real? It's absolutely real. Everything that's advertised on the websites that have me signing something is me signing it in my house and sending it back to them. So it's got a little bit of the J.R. Ponderosa DNA on it, for what that's worth, a little Oklahoma red dirt. But it's they're all legit. And another thing that's legit is our T-shirt. T-shirts are really doing well at ProWrestlingTees.com, and they got a new Slobberknocker shirt that folks in Chicago saw. The Tougher Than a $2 Steak shirt is still the number one seller, and kind of a cool shirt. And so, anyway, the ProWrestlingTees.com/Jim Ross takes you right to their site. Nothing else, go browse. They have every size imaginable, and they ship anywhere in the world. That covers pretty much everything, right? I want to, again, thank everybody that made my visit to Chicago last week so enjoyable. Gosh, I had a good time. It's such a great city, so many wonderful memories. Met great people, shook a lot of hands, signed a lot of stuff, really had fun. And again, Lisa Verone and her husband and her staff, the Squared Circle, are really treated us like royalty, and I can't thank them enough. And if you're in Chicago, you need to go to the Squared Circle and grab you a JR's Burger or Slobberknocker Pizza. Easy for me to say. I've been talking to, or my agent's been talking to some people in the UK about me coming back for Mark's Spoken Word Tour, one-man show. Looks like if that happens, it'll be the spring of 2015. We're still working on the details. We hope it happens, but 2015 for the UK, we think. So nothing's guaranteed, nothing's done, nothing's signed. Until it's signed, everybody gets their cash. It ain't done deal. No word either on exact word on our potential Australian events. We've been talking about those for a long time. The conversation going back and forth. I have not been involved in those conversations, nor will I be. But the representative, my representative, and our team will handle all that. I hope that tour happens, but I don't know any more about it. But they're talking. That's a good thing. They're talking, and soon we can work out. I've got to get everything done that I'm going to do on these shows done before football season starts, because I'm not going out of the country and missing any OU football games for any money. And I know that may not make any sense, but that's the way it is. And I want to thank you guys for being with us this week again. Can't say thanks enough. Ted DiBiase is here next week. We're going to have some fun with Ted. We're going to talk about the Mid-South days. You know, Ted's mother and father are both pro wrestlers. His dad died in the ring when Ted was 15 years old. We'll talk about how that impacted Ted's life. We'll talk about how the Funks impacted his life and Bill Watts. Ted's first territory was the Mid-South Wrestling Territory. We'll talk about that. I'm going to play Word Association with Ted, where I'm going to give him the name of every promoter that he's worked for and him give us a word or a phrase or a sentence that describes him. So I'm interested to see how he describes Cowboy Bill Watts and how he describes Jim Barnett and Vince McMahon and Vince McMahon's father and all those guys, Ole Anderson, Sam Muchnick, Paul Bosch. So we'll talk about all that. Great history next week. And looking back to it, what Ted thinks the business is, how he looks at it today, his evaluation of today's pro wrestling world and what it needs in his view. and he was as good a heel as I ever saw. And we'll talk about that and his run with the Junkyard Dog and Jim Duggan and Mid-South were epic. And we'll talk about that next week. So it should be a fun show with Teddy here, Hall of Famer from WWE. So again, thanks to all of you for downloading our show, and thanks for supporting the Ross Report by doing all your online shopping through my Amazon link. Man, I cannot tell you how much that means to us. It is the easiest way to help us out. There are no hidden fees. There are no extra charges. You don't have to buy anything special. Just every time you use my link to shop, Amazon kicks back some money to the show, and that helps us keep this thing rolling and going for free. You can get my Amazon links by going to podcastone.com, clicking on the Keep Our Podcast Free banner at the top of the page, and then clicking on the Ross Report. I got Amazon links for the U.S., Canada, and the U.K. Bookmark it. Make it easy. Go to Podcast One, that's podcastone.com, click on the Keep Our Podcast Free banner at the top of the page, and then you can support the Ross Report very easy that way. Folks, I appreciate you all, every one of you, so much. Thank you very much for downloading our show, for supporting us on social media, for your questions on Twitter, and I hope you'll be here with us again next week when Ted DiBiase is our guest. And remember, do something nice for somebody tomorrow, because our tomorrows are not guaranteed. See you later, folks. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to The Ross Report. Download a brand new episode every week at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.